Welcome to PCI Magazine's Coded Podcast. I'm Kristen Johansson, Editor-in-Chief. Today, we are wrapping up our three-episode series on digital transformation with Zach Woods of Alchemy Cloud. Today's episode is titled Predictive Chemistry in 2020, Fact or Fiction. We'll be diving a little deeper into the world of digitalization to better understand what companies can fully achieve by going digital. Welcome back, Zach. Are you ready to wrap this series up?
Heck no. I want to do this forever, Kristen. What are you talking about?
You need to come up with some more topics then.
Yeah, I'm on it. I'll get back to you in a flash. No problem. Yeah, but of course, I'm excited to talk about this particular topic as well. Lots and lots to unpack here. But maybe we'll promise to go like level B1 for all of my Erasmus students out there. We won't go too crazy.
All right, that sounds good. We will get started. In our previous two podcasts, we covered the first two steps in Alchemy's roadmap to digitalization, which are basic digitalization and strategic innovation. What can you tell me about the third and final step?
Yeah, absolutely. So the third step in our roadmap is, and we do believe, again, that these are in fact sequential things. So step one, basic digitalization. Step two, strategic innovation. Step three, prerequisite number one and number two, is the glory goal, predictive chemistry. People are like, what does predictive chemistry mean? Well, it actually means exactly like it sounds. How can we move away from test, iterate at a bench, which of course has cost impacts, right? From a materials perspective, from people time perspective. Of course, there may be, depending on the molecules that you're bending or creating, there may be risks associated with that, right? Like certain personnel risks that may be associated with creating certain molecules. To how do we leverage data that's being captured during the course of our experimentation to actually help shorten the product development cycle from 18, 24 months to 12 months. 8-4 months in certain instances. So predictive chemistry, stage three, exciting.
Okay, so what kinds of things does a company need to have in place before they can move into this phase of digitalization?
Oh my gosh. So I'm going to answer this a little bit coyly, but I can't stress enough how important I really believe, and we talked about this a lot in the second piece of this series. I think first and foremost, an organization needs leadership that empowers their people to actually try and experiment with new things. And I know that sounds a bit tongue-in-cheek, but I can't tell you how important it is that, you know, we see companies that may even have certain tools in place, right? So I'll get to the tooling and the software in a moment because it is important. But the culture of the organization isn't one of trying and experimenting and actually, I'll use the dreaded word, piloting things. So also don't be like Mercedes and pilot rental cars. Evidently, that doesn't work. So just an FYI. So, you know, number one, I truly believe, I know we beat that like a dead horse last time, but I think culture is a huge thing that organizations need to actually get to be able to do predictive chemistry. And then I think the second thing, I mean, yes, tooling is crucial. You know, we talk a lot about internally, and the reason we talk internally is because a lot of our prospective customers or current customers aren't ready to have this conversation, which is you need data that is well-structured, that is well-labeled, that has semantic meaning, and that actually can be ingested by systems, and or you need a system that helps you achieve that. So many, many organizations, and here I'm sure I'll strike a chord with a lot of companies, you know, each and every chemist at the organization, so say they have a lab of 20 people, that's actually a small lab for some of those big honking companies that are out there in the marketplace, but say you have 20 people, but those 20 people are working on their own individual favorite, well crafted over the course of their 10-year tenure at the organization, Excel spreadsheet that just has, you know, Kristen's name on it and Zach's little flair, and probably some logos if I have anything to do with it. And the problem with that becomes is that when you want to have, again, semantic level data and structured data in order to put that information into a predictive model, it becomes incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to actually sift through decades of Excel data that are not consistently structured and labeled. This is a major problem, and I think just to highlight, this is a major problem not just in the formulation of new products. This is a major problem in the procurement organizations of large chemical companies. This is a major problem in the supply chain organization of large chemical companies. So it's a problem across the board. But if you don't have well-structured data sets, either because you have super OCD lab staff or lab leadership that require formats to be followed over the course of years or decades, then you need to adopt capabilities like electronic lab notebooks and lab information management software, which is what Alchemy is in the business of, in order to provide a structured way so that information can be brought into the organization.
Okay, great. So what are some general ways that a company can be more responsive to customers and market needs through predictive chemistry? I'm going to ask you later to talk about some, maybe some specific examples, but if you could just give some general information now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one is really, really easy. And I think the lowest level, the lowest hanging fruit, so to speak, that is, how can we bring better products to market faster? Almost, period. That's the end. That is the way that companies can be more responsive. You know, so here I'll interpret the word responsive as meaning delivering what the customer requires or says that they would like. So think, I want a better, more long-lasting cooler, right? That's a really practical example. Well, if there is a huge amount of customers that would love to buy a cooler that has that capability to keep drinks cold for a year, let's say, then the company that wants to compete with Igloo coolers or wants to compete with Yeti coolers, well, if they could shorten their time to develop that product and gain market share, then that's a really concrete way that that consumers would benefit from predictive chemistry, if you will.
Okay, good. So if you can give us a couple of examples of how predictive chemistry has altered a company's R&D efforts, maybe looking at some of the customers you've worked with and changes you've seen.
Yeah. So again, I'm gonna keep beating this drum. I've chosen this drum and now I'm going to really keep nailing it. One of the biggest changes, and I truly mean this, both inside of the organizations that we sell to, as well as organizations that we, Alchemy, do not work with, but other organizations, you know, that are in this space, material informatics, AI and chemistry. I think one of the biggest impacts that this has had is it's changed the culture of these companies. It truly has changed the way that organizations think about everything from innovation concepts. So how do we map strategically the topics that we should explore? And that's not just from a chemistry perspective, that's from a business perspective. And then the next step down would be design of experiment. How do we design an experiment to get the optimal number of options that are available to our chemists to experiment with, while again, reducing the number of variables at play? And one of those variables is how many formulations do we have to test to actually bring this product from concept to chemistry? You asked specifically about certain examples. Is that one of the things that you're interested in knowing, Kristen?
Yes. If you can share that information.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll keep it super high level and redacted to a certain extent. So on a cultural front, that's a big change. But on a second front, a really pragmatic thing, an impact that we observe in the marketplace, I'll put it that way, is we see companies literally reducing the scope of their experimentation from you have, let's use a very pragmatic example, you have formally 300 experiments that a company would run in order to bring a product to market. Using modern, I would call them machine learning and artificial intelligence techniques, these organizations are reducing, this is DOE, design of experiment, they're reducing the number of experiments that chemical researchers begin with from 300 to 50 or from 300 to 25. And then further, so the last step of this is not only are they reducing the number of experiments that they run, but they're actually achieving better results than they ever have before. So, you know, kind of like benefits on both sides, right? So you're not only reducing your cost and your exposure and your time to market, you're getting better products while reducing your time, effort, and energy and cost. And that's hugely beneficial. So, you know, anybody out there in the paints and coatings industry, this is definitely something you should be interested in. So how do I reduce the number of trials that I need to run for my architectural coating or for my industrial coating? How can I reduce the number of testing cycles for my quality control by sort of eliminating upstream the number of experiments that I will run so that I quality control less products that have better functionality and more impact in the marketplace? So paints and coatings companies for sure, but also foam manufacturers are seeing benefits from this. Tire manufacturers are seeing benefits from this. So again, a lot of that impact on the culture side. So how do we look at running experimentation in the lab? But at a very nuts and bolts, like what's my ROI here? People are reducing the number of experiments that they need to run in order to achieve better results than they were able to in the past.
Okay, Zach, my last question. I know you're an optimist at heart, but if you were to put your negative outlook hat on, what is a less than cheery consequence of organizations who refuse or who are extremely slow to adopt such methodologies?
Is this where, do I have to pantomime like I'm putting on a hat so that I, okay, because I feel I need to take off my positive hat and put on my negative hat. It's tough to do this, but I think as part of my job, I mean, quite frankly, is sort of challenging the status quo. And a lot of the times challenging the status quo means, hey, I really respect and admire what you've been able to do in the marketplace. You've created great, insert word here, coatings or raw materials or additives or colorants or whatever it is that you supply to the chemicals industry or to the paints and coatings industry. But I really believe, you know, let me focus on three really big impact areas that I think organizations will have. The first one, again, I'm beating my drum, but I hope it helps the audience from a consistency standpoint. I really think that organizations that fail to adopt these type of techniques are going to suffer in the talent spectrum. I really believe that organizations that do not begin to adopt these ways of doing their work, they're going to have a really tough time to attract new blood into their organization to sort of continue the legacy. We all have a finite lifespan on this earth. None of us, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, will be working when we're 90 years old. I think, you know, here I'm being very, very poignant, but I think it's just the truth. The chemical industry and the paints and coatings industry specifically has really suffered from a dearth of talent in the last two decades. And I think that, people that are of the millennial and certainly of the Gen Z build, they are looking for companies that are doing things in a sleek, connected, modern way. And I think that organizations that don't start to adopt or really ramp up their adoption of these types of tools, I think they'll suffer from a brain drain, truly. I think that that's actually already happening. We see that at our customers, but we also see that at non-customers, that organizations that have these tools, again, the tools or the culture, which one comes first, like the chicken or the egg, they tend to have more open, more collaborative cultures, and they tend to be able to attract better talent from better universities. So I think that's going to be a really huge impact. I think secondly, competitiveness in the marketplace. You know, obviously anyone that's a paint and coatings industry veteran knows that this industry is definitely driven by supply and demand. I think a lot of times organizations think, well, supply and demand will kind of always guide our business trajectory. And I think that that's not actually the case. I think that, sure, there needs to be demand, but consumers' taste changes. Consumers' taste changes. And if consumers' taste changes into a direction that your company hasn't been innovating, let's say you're working on a new type of paint or you're working on a new type of chemical resistance, and lo and behold, all of those consumers had pent up demand for that type of product. If you're not able to be flexible and to quickly mimic or fast follow, you know, your competition, you're going to really struggle to follow and keep up with that customer trend. I think that's a second really huge impact, is just on the sort of keeping up with the Joneses or keeping up with the competitiveness. And then on the third front, I think that organizations that don't adopt these type of technologies, I think they're going to really suffer, not just in their product development, but I think they're going to see just a general downturn in a number of their capabilities across the entire organization. So sort of as I mentioned earlier, you know, I think that if you don't, it's not just predictive chemistry that this is about. This is about a way of working that is about systematizing and insight-driven and data-driven methodologies to getting the best outcomes. And I think that if you're not willing to do it in the research and development space or the technical service space, the likelihood that you are doing it or are willing to do it in your order to cash process or in your online presence, the way that customers are buying material from you or whatever the case might be, I think the likelihood is super duper low. I think rarely, if ever, will you have an organization that's like, let's call it a completely AI powered HR team, and they are using paper lab notebooks in the lab. Even though those are two completely different departments with two completely different functions, I really do think that this is about organizations sort of drinking the Kool-Aid. And I think that those organizations that don't will see just a diminishment of performance across their entire enterprise and across functions.
Wow, that was really, really interesting. Good information. Well, Zach, we've wrapped up our series. I want to thank you for all of your time, all of your input during the podcast, in the prep work. So I really appreciate it. It's been an education for me. And I think, you know, I really hope and I think that you've given a lot of really good information to our listeners and a lot of things for them to think about. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Was really happy to do it and appreciate all of your prep work as well. And appreciate all the listeners tuning in. And obviously, we'd love to have deeper and more positive hat on conversations with those that might be interested in our next talk.
Good. And I'm actually also excited to announce that at PCI's upcoming Coatings, Trends, and Technologies conference in September, we will feature a panel discussion on digital transformation. So we're going to continue the conversation there. We're calling it The Lab of the Future, Digitalize to Accelerate New Product Development. And our panelists include Sasha Novakovic from Alchemy Cloud, who I know you know very well, Zach.
Yeah, I've heard that name.
Jerry Powers from Chromaflow Technologies, Paul Vragel from For a Better Business, and Greg Williams from Bayer. So to our listeners, if you want to learn more about this topic and hear from companies that are either in the early phase of going digital or who are already a few years in, be sure to join us at CTT for this panel discussion. To learn more about CTT, you can visit our website at pcimag.com and then just click on the events tab. Thanks again for joining us for this podcast. Until next time.